Radio Vermont, WDEV, takes no responsibility for the opinions or statements made by the House Calls Vermont show host or their guests. The information provided during the House Calls Vermont show is offered only as a public service and should not be used as a substitute for obtaining any professional advice from a licensed professional.
Our house, in the middle of our street, our house.
It is time for House Call Vermont with Jim Bradley and Chris West. Each week, a new topic specific to building or renovating in the Green Mountains and your phone calls. Brought to you by RK Miles, a third-generation family-owned business, proud to be your local building materials supplier. Found a location near you at rkmiles.com. By Poly Construction, for over 30 years known for anything construction, big or small jobs. One call does it all. P-O-L-L-I Construction.com. By Ken Libby of the Stowe Area Realty Group at Keller Williams Stowe, your trusted advisor, 802-793-2002. Curtis Lumber, with two locations in Vermont, Williston and Burlington. Request a quote for your next project online at curtislumber.com. Sticks and Stuff and Swanton Lumber, locations in St. Albans, Enosburg, Swanton, Derby, and Middlesex. By Shamrock Painting, painting and custom wood finishing. ShamrockPainting.com. By Matt Clark's Northern Basement Systems, for all things basementy. NorthernAnyFoundations.com. Your participation is encouraged. Also, our podcast brought to you by White Windows, high-performance passive house windows and doors. Online at wythewindows.com. WDEV's House Calls Vermont. Here's your host. Here are your hosts, Jim and Chris.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. Thanks, Joel. This is Jim Bradley, and I'm here with Chris West.
Hey, guys.
We're here on House Calls Vermont this Saturday afternoon. Lovely Saturday afternoon, actually. The weather's looking great, though Chris likes a very stormy, cloudy day.
Personally, not into the sun. I like it cloudy and stormy, but this'll do.
This'll do.
They're out there on the street right now in Middlebury. On the way out of the car, on the way to the studio, I ran into a client of ours who is out there on the street finishing the holiday. Festive decorations
and such. Yeah. Oh, great.
So come on down to Middlebury in the next week or so. And
or even Waterbury.
I have my buries. I'm going to also do another bury in there a second. Come down to Waterbury and take a look at what they're doing here. It's looking very festive outside.
So look at the map, Chris. It says, you are here, Waterbury. So good to have everybody here today. We are talking again to finish up where we started last week on indoor air quality and why this is so important for everybody throughout the United States, throughout the world, because we live in homes, we live in buildings, we live in whatever type of a structure, and we have to make sure that, yes, it's energy efficient, yes, it's durable, but most importantly, it's healthy, it's safe, and the indoor air quality is where it needs to be.
Buildings are for people.
Yes.
And if we don't make them safe and healthy for people, then what are we doing? Make it as energy efficient as you want. But, you know, we need to make sure that we're creating safe spaces for people. And as Jim mentioned on show one of the season, we have just started the part of the season where we're inside 90%+ of the time. So yep. That indoor air quality is much more important. We're also not opening our windows and doors for ventilation, or we shouldn't be. I do know
There
are people who will do that. There's an energy cost to that, right? You're chilling your house down. And there are sometimes health ramifications for a bad indoor temperature. So we want to make sure that we're dealing with our indoor air quality. If you don't remember what we were talking about, the specifics of last week, we started off by talking about what indoor air quality is, what the metrics are, what the different types of pollutants are, what are the causes of those pollutants. And at the very end, we stopped at radon. Radon, of course, being an invisible, odorless gas that's given off by rocks.
Yes.
And can migrate into your house. One of the things that our audit report says, and that most audit reports should say, is during the process of renovating your house, we may make your house tighter. If we're making your house tighter, that can have ramifications for other things in your house, including radon, including combustion appliances working differently. If you're using combustion appliances that do not get their combustion air from outside, you know, we either a what we call atmospheric, right, where the air that's used in the combustion process is taken from the room where that appliance is. Think of a wood stove. A wood stove is a perfect example of a usually not sealed combustion. We've had clients who are like, yeah, well, when the fireplace doesn't start, I just crack the door. Mm-hmm. That's just admitting that your house is too tight for that to work and that you should probably look at indoor air quality because there's not a lot of air getting in there anyway.
Well, there's that. The argument then is triggered by that is the fact that people say, why are you telling me to tighten up my house when it's going to cause these other issues? The reality is you need to make it tight and ventilate it right. So you want to make your house tight. You want to keep all that expensively conditioned air from getting outdoors. And once it does, bringing in air that you don't want through bad sources, through bad pathways,
right,
you know, coming through outlets, wall systems, damp basements, things like that, or attic assemblies. You don't want it coming in through there. So yes, tighten it up. But at the other side, you need to address it. So it's not about putting the wood stove in and finding out it backdrafts because you have a cold chimney, a tight house, and say, I'm just going to open up a window or just not use it and smoke check the house.
Right.
When you do, that's not the answer. The answer is, okay, let's put some science behind this. Let's go to that next step. Well, if we put outside combustion air into the firebox, it's going to make it burn more efficiently, and it's going to draft appropriately at the same time.
And it won't be depressurizing the house,
yes,
bringing in air through pathways that we don't want. So very important when you're tightening up a house, or something that Jim and I have spoken before on the show, where builders are building new houses and they're looking at trying to hit a very airtight number,
yes,
but not looking at what happens when the airtight number is so tight that you need mechanical ventilation to ensure indoor air quality. And when we do an audit or we do a blower door test on a house and we're like, okay, great, this house is one air change per hour. You needed to get less than three. You did really well. What's going to happen with the health and safety of the indoor occupants if they don't have a heat recovery ventilation system?
Well, with the VOCs that are given off just by the building materials alone,
right,
add to that, as we said before, about 500 gallons of moisture is given off into the indoor airstream from the building materials themselves drying out. So add that moisture component with the VOCs in a very tight house, you are subjecting yourself to bad indoor air quality.
Right.
You know, with that, I've done lots of tests on a, you know, weekly basis. I'll go out and do tests for builders who are doing a great job in making the house much, much tighter. They're getting it well below the three air changes per hour. In fact, some of them are getting it to somewhere between one and two air changes, and some even less than that. Well, that's great for an air tightness
For the non-lived-in house.
Exactly. But yeah, once you start living in there, you start breathing all this air. And then when I talked to them about that, I said, you know, granted, Vermont does not specifically enforce the requirement for balanced ventilation unless you're following the stretch code under RVs or you're in the high-performance tier tract under Efficiency Vermont. Under new builds for rebates, you know, or you're building to the past of house standard, then you're going to have to make sure you have some type of balanced mechanical ventilation. But you can build a code compliant house today, make sure it has the proper R values in the walls, the ceilings, the basement, everything else. And all you really will probably have is mechanical ventilation that's exhaust only.
Right, bath fans, range hoods, things of that sort.
And so when they're building these really, really tight houses, they think, well, you know, it's just going to cost too much. When you're spending $10,000 to $15,000 on the granite countertops in the kitchen and you're looking at maybe $3,000 as much, you know, sometimes whole house systems are definitely more expensive, but you can do some spot balanced ventilation as well and achieve some of these minimum standards. And it's not going to cost a lot, especially if you start having health problems or you start having parts of your house rot away because it's too humid inside or anything like that. So I think that argument should be nullified about, oh, it's too expensive, because you're willing to pay for it sometimes on the aesthetic touchy-feely type of things, you know, the feathers and the bows and all that kind of stuff for the house.
But I have feathers all over my house.
And that brings us to another question for another show. But, you know, with that, if you're willing to spend the money there, make sure you're protecting the health and safety of the individuals in the home, and you're willing to make sure that your house is going to be durable, so you're not replacing items prematurely because they rotted out, because they stayed too moist during the process of the life of the house.
Right. Once again, house is a system.
Yes.
It's our mantra. You cannot affect one part of the house without affecting how other parts of the house operate. Want to throw out there the number? The number is 802-244-1777. That number again, 802-244-1777. And please give us a call if you have any questions about what's going on in your house. I mean, one of the things that we notice right away when we start having these, I don't know, it was 11 degrees at my house this morning on Jericho. That's when we're driving to the studio, we can start looking at houses and seeing the snow melt on the roofs, and we're like, okay, or we're seeing other indications of building science issues as we're driving by.
Oh, look, icicles. They're so pretty.
Yeah.
And so expensive at the same time.
And we can talk about icicles and what causes them. Once again, icicles are caused by warm air getting through the top pressure plane, hitting the underside of the roof, melting some of the snow there that turns into liquid water and runs down to just at the eaves where there's no more warmth in that air heating the underside of the sheathing because it's now over an outside space. So it's freezing and it refreezes, creating icicles. And it's a very good indication that your house has got a very active stack effect happening, if nothing else.
In here, I thought Chris was going to give us the recipe for ice that he's found. So
recipe for ice, dihydroxygen. There was a person who once at a high school put out a petition to see if everybody wanted to ban dihydroxygen, and everybody voted because it sounded horrible and it just was water. And they were like, yes, this is how deep some people are willing to go. Most people are willing to go once they get, I revved up against an issue, whether or not they know the actual stuff that's going on.
It sounds bad, but think of it this way. If you look at icicles on the side of the building, just the long and the short of it, think of it as little dollar signs hanging on the end of your eave because it's indicating that you're losing heat and your building durability is being affected.
Right. Another thing that happens with that is something called an ice dam. And an ice dam is kind of like 6 or 7 inches up from the actual icicles, and that is that creates a buildup, and that the new water that's getting melted will build up there, and that can be so heavy that it can rip the sides off of some rotted assemblies. So make sure that if you have icicles falling hanging off of your house, that you get in touch with someone like us, someone at the Efficiency Vermont Energy Excellence Network, to come out and do an energy audit and propose weatherization steps to get that mitigated.
Yeah, because as we're moving through as a society, we have to make sure that we're definitely adhering towards resource preservation when we're building or remodeling our homes. What I mean by that is resource preservation. Do it once and do it right, so you don't have to replace things that fail again later. And so, you know, that's one of the big components, but also getting the indoor air quality component right as well. Because if I'm just going to go to somebody and say, I can help you spend less on your heating bill, or I'm going to, you know, make it more comfortable inside your home. But have I addressed that important issue? Because I've tightened up the box. And once I did, then these other things that could be out of balance become more concentrated, like the CO2 buildup just from you breathing. And, you know, and when you do that, you increase that CO2 levels inside the house. That really affects the cognitive abilities, as we mentioned last week, you know, by as much as 50%. You know, if you have better indoor air quality, you can improve your cognitive ability by at least 50%.
But there is a maximum of a cognitive ability. I mean, we are limited as human beings.
And sure.
Yeah. I'm at 100% right now, and it's not the 100% of some other people. So I just want to point that out. It's not like getting oxygen in there is going to make you smarter than you are. So we're coming up against our first break. The number again, 802-244-1777, 802-244-1777, and we'll continue talking about indoor air quality, and we'll move on to how to mitigate it and systems we use for that. So stay tuned until after the break.
Christmas Eve Then and Now by Wythe Windows. Christmas Eve Then.
And Mama in her kerchief and I in my cap had just settled our brains for a long winter's nap.
Tighten up that kerchief. It's going to be a cold one.
It's that nasty draft from the window that's to blame.
Away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters and threw up the sash.
Hurry, I think I see something.
It's stuck.
And Christmas Eve now.
Look, it's Santa. What a clear, unobstructed view we get through our white windows. Quick, tilt it open.
Hey, Santa, it's Jim.
Those are some good-looking white tilt-and-turn windows.
I know. 8 locking points keep them air and watertight, and they're made in New Jersey.
That's my next stop. I have a new guitar for the boss.
I heard him exclaim as he drove out of sight.
White windows for all, for a house cozy and tight.
White windows, high-performance passive house windows and doors. Online at WYTHEWindows.com.
Hey, everybody, this is Chris West, House Calls Vermont. I'm here with my buddy Jim Bradley.
Hello again, everybody.
And I just wanted to point out there's an ad there. We're all for sticks and stuff, and we're all for insulation. But make sure, as we've always said, that if you're going to be adding insulation to your attic, get that audit done first, because adding without air sealing is throwing good money after bad. So we're all for using Knauf insulation. All kinds of insulation are great, but make sure that you're doing it in a way that you're going to get the best benefit out of it.
Yeah, because there's a big difference between what is prescribed measures and what is the actual performance. So you can have a prescribed measure like saying, listen, you're going to put R50 in your attic or, you know, whatever. But it's not going to perform that way if you haven't gotten the details right first, the air sealing measures, the vapor control, things of that nature. So if you want to hit those values where they get them in a laboratory where everything's perfect and then they give you the rating, you're going to have to make sure you do the details first.
So getting back to the indoor air quality question, we had talked about pretty much all the things that can cause them, and now we're going to talk about how do we fix it. Jim and I had a meeting earlier today. We were looking at the various spot ventilation systems that are out there. And
what's the difference between spot and whole house?
So a whole house ventilation is where you have a central unit. It's kind of like the difference between having a Rinnai in a room and having a forced hot air system in your house, right? You have one centralized unit that is doing the main work, whether with a ventilation system that's bringing in the air and then piping it through the house to every room or exhausting from certain rooms and supplying to other rooms. And spot ventilation is it's only doing that one room, right? Just like that Rinnai space heater is only going to really heat the one room it's in. You're going to have a similar thing with spot ventilation. So spot ventilation includes your bath fan, mm-hmm. right? That's a room where you are sucking air out of the room, usually to control moisture after or during a shower or bathing event. And those things are usually on a timer or on a humidistat that reads, you know, the humidity in the room and will turn on and off based on certain.
It reads the room.
Reads the room like a good comedian. I guess a good comedian would be a good analogy there. And so when you're putting in spot ventilation, there are two types of spot ventilation. Mm-hmm. There is the exhaust only ventilation, which is your bath fan or your range hood. And then there are replacement systems, which are balanced ventilation, which means it's sucking air out through a heat exchanger, which takes the heat that's in the room and it puts it back into the incoming cold air stream. So you're using a heat exchanger without adding any heat through resistance electric or any other way, and bringing in that air at a higher temperature than outside temperature.
And one thing that's so important when we're discussing balanced ventilation and why this is so important, because we don't want more exhaust than we do want supply. That's why it needs to be balanced. And you can have too much supply, but if you're going to yield in any side of the equation, you want more supply than you do exhaust. Because if you are depressurizing your home more than you're getting fresh air in, then it's going to start to rob areas or take air in from those pathways, like through windows and wall systems and mold and rodent droppings and toxic other air, you know, items. You don't want that being the airstream, your fresh airstream being brought across that, because then it gets affected by the same thing.
So balanced ventilation is the goal.
Yes.
And we are going to be talking about two different types of those. One is the spot ventilation, which mm-hmm. is clearly, you know, we were talking about last time. And by the way, if you're interested in knowing more, we have a complete show on ventilation from last season, which goes very deep into what are the different options. That's on our YouTube channel. There are lots of things on our YouTube channel. Go to youtube.com/C/housecallsvermont, and you can take a look at an exhaustive discussion about ventilation.
Blew me away there, Chris, I tell you.
Yeah, go there and see that. It's a great show, and we'll give you a lot of information. We're going to now go over some of that information here as well. There are basically two types of spot ventilation. One is that exhaust ventilation. The other is something like a Lunos Ego, or like the CA70, the Zender ZA70.
Yep. Panasonic has the other
Whisper.
Whisper Comfort.
Comfort, it's called. And so these are three types of systems that can be put in, very good for a retrofit situation where it will actually do balanced ventilation for that one room. We were looking at one of them today, and we were a bit disappointed because when it gets to the below 20 degree range, what they do is they, in order to stop the core from freezing, which is bad, obviously, you don't want the core to freeze because then you don't get heat exchange over the core, they will stop bringing in fresh air and they'll recirculate that indoor air. And when it's, and one of those units was a 15% of the capacity above freezing was what you got below freezing. So it was giving you 20 CFM during a regular cycle above 32 degrees. But as soon as you got below 19 degrees, it was like 4 CFM, which is way too low for having healthy indoor air. So we got to make sure that when we're sizing these systems, if we're doing that spot ventilation, that we're doing intelligently. That is something that a well-designed balanced ventilation whole house system won't do. So if you are doing a new build, or if you have the ability to install a whole house ventilation system because your basement is unfinished, so running the pipes is the tubes is very easy and things like that, it's highly recommended to go the extra step. But if you can't, then better to be using one of these balanced ventilation spot ventilators than to be using exhaust ventilation.
You know, when you look at ventilation like this, as opposed to some of the older bath fans that were just big noisemakers, they were great for privacy because they made so much noise, but they wouldn't really do exactly what you needed to ensure fresh air. You know, they were used for odor control. They were used for, you know, evacuating excess humidity after a shower, so your mirrors are clean and everything else are clear when you get out of the shower. And they could ramp up to as much as 140 to 150 CFMs. A lot of them, like in a half bath, they're usually about 50 CFM. But they would do more so instantaneous ventilation and would not operate for long periods of time. But when we're talking about some of these other units, they operate at a lower CFM or cubic feet of air flow per minute because they're going to be on constantly.
Right.
You know, so, but that being said, some of these units that we were looking at for the bathroom, they are going to, especially once you get down to the colder temperatures, I think one of them you'd mentioned that was like 4 CFM.
Yep.
And so, yeah, that will circulate some air, but it's not going to keep that mirror from fogging up. It's not going to be great for odor control, and it becomes less of a performer than what we're looking for.
And when we're talking CFM, basically what we're trying to see is how much is the volume of the room and how long is it going to take that unit to change that one air change,
yes,
right? So let's say you got a hundred square foot bathroom. It's 8 feet tall. You've got 800 cubic feet of air.
Yep.
That 4 CFM.
It's going to take a while.
It's going to take quite a while to evacuate. That's 200 hours to get one air change out of that. And what we really want is at a minimum a third of an air change per hour. So every 3 hours, the entire air has been replaced. So we really got to be careful when, especially because we live in such a cold climate, to look very specifically at what these are promising at the temperatures we want them to be operating at. Yep. It's the same thing when we're designing heat pumps. Heat pumps are great. Air source heat pumps are great, but their output goes down with the temperature and their efficiency goes down with the temperature. So when we're designing a house, let's say the house has a 20,000 BTU per hour heat load at its minimum temperature. If we're going to size that heat pump, we need to size it double because it's giving out 50% at that lowest temperature. So if we want the house to still be kept warm by this particular heat pump, we need to keep that that in mind. And the same thing with these heat recovery ventilation systems. Mm-hmm. A lot of the balanced ventilation system, whole house systems, also shut down the intake of outdoor air to defrost that core. And then during that time, you're getting less fresh air. So if just, it's about being cognizant of what the unit can really do and learning how to properly read the specification sheets that the manufacturers offer.
And Chris, you were mentioning earlier today that really that design temperature should be for like negative 13 degrees, you know, Fahrenheit. So that's something that your HVAC individual should be looking out for when they're designing a system for you. And not just selling you a unit. And that's what kind of took us back a little bit today when we're looking at some of these manufacturers of these devices where they're purporting that, yes, they can definitely solve the ventilation need. But when we started doing the math, they weren't even hitting the minimum values for our climate at our extreme temperatures. And that was a bit disappointing. And so I mentioned to Chris, I said, why can't they even put this on the market if it's not going to do the job? And, you know, it's basically akin to highway mileage versus actual.
Right.
That's really what we're looking at here. So just truth in advertising, because really we're trying to make an effective system when we're building and retrofitting our homes. So we need all these parts and pieces to perform as designed and as purported that they will actually perform.
So ventilation is the main way of dealing with it, bad indoor air quality.
Yes.
Because, as we've said before, that dilution is the solution. If you have a high concentration of something that's bad, the way to make it less bad is to dilute it till it's almost not poisonous, right? It's not a problem. Mm-hmm. But where do we start? How do we find out where our house is at? And that is the testing side of things. We need to make sure that we're going to be basing our analysis and our recommendations on data. And not just, I know what you say as a client, oh, sometimes I'm lightheaded when I turn on the dryer, or sometimes my partner realizes that my cognition is a little bit less after we get up in the morning. I mean, what we want is actually hard data, because hard data will allow us to make good science-based recommendations for how to make your indoor air quality better.
And that's why this 2 weeks worth of shows here is so important, because we are commencing with our indoor air quality testing. And we did get several of our listeners who signed up last year to come back this year and say, yes, we're ready to go. And we've got the units ready to go out. And they're going to be sent out this coming week to at least three or four homes.
Yep.
And then that'll be there, you said originally, I think 2 to 3 weeks.
We're looking at 2 weeks, but you know, a week kind of to drop the unit off and get it back and get it analyzed. But we want people to have them in their house for 2 weeks. There's going to be a sheet that comes along with it, which will say bedroom one, door open, date, door one, bedroom one, door closed, date, because we want you to have 4 days in that with that monitor in that bedroom, door open, door closed, door open, door closed, as we said before, because the outside weather affects how buildings operate, right? It's one of the things that's very important. So we need to make sure that we have different outside conditions when we're doing those different setups, you know, in your bedroom with the door closed, it's 30 degrees outside, it's mm-hmm. rainy. What does that do? 2 days later, you do the same thing. It happens to be minus 10 and it's clear. And what is really happening with the indoor air quality, in that room for you? And then moving it to another room. We'd like to get a couple of bedrooms. We'd like to get a living room. And with those three readings over, 4 days each, that's right there, 12 days. So that's a setup, straight up 2 weeks. We want you, the people who are participating, to put down the room that it's in during the date so that we can discern the readings from different locations. And then we can come back and we will share, once we're done with getting this unit out to everybody, it'll take 2 or 3 months to get everything done and collated, and we'll be able to share the results with you, and we'll be able to talk to the people who participated in the study about possible recommendations for improving their indoor air quality.
And if you're still looking to participate, there's time.
Yep.
Don't answer yet, but you'll also receive. There's no cost to you except for return shipping of the device. You know, we'll send it in the box with the proper bubble wrap, not to be popped by everybody, but to put that back in the box, the monitor, send it back to us, or we'll come by and pick it up, depending your proximity, geographically speaking. And then you, so you can still participate. So if they want to participate in this, Chris, where should they go to sign up?
So send us an email at housecallsvt@gmail.com. Once again, that's housecallsvt@gmail.com. Say you're interested in an indoor air quality, survey, and we'll put you on the list. And the people who already have signed up and have gotten emails from me, we will be getting in touch this next week and getting the units out to some of you. We only have 3 units that we can distribute right now, so the top 3 people will be getting those, not top 3, but the people on the list, and then we'll be cycling through everybody so everybody get an opportunity.
You know, so when we're looking at this, we're really excited about getting this going, because I know when I did the same test in my house, it was telling. It really revealed a lot. And so it caused me to make some behavioral changes or operational changes inside the home, and it's made a big difference. And so, as I think I've mentioned before, when we go inside the home now, and if the ERVs are not on, you can tell if the house has been closed up and everything else. It's pretty telling, and you get more used to fresh air. you can notice a difference, and you'd seek after that. So I encourage you to go ahead and sign up, be a part of this, and you'll have those revealing opportunities as well for your home. And then we're definitely are going to share the data without revealing names or addresses or anything else. We're just going to share the data of what we found, like we do with our regular energy audits.
Right, and we will be contacting the individual people who were part of the survey to let them know what their individual results were. Because we want everybody to be able to use this data for improving their own houses.
And so, you know, if you are an individual who maybe has certain sensitivities, physically speaking, and you have certain health concerns, chronic conditions, things like that, indoor air quality is a good place to start, you know, because that's where, as we said before, you're 90% of the time this time of year indoors or more for some. And if your indoor air quality isn't where it needs to be, it's going to affect that health. It's going to affect maybe not immediately, but it's going to be a contributing factor to put stressors on the body, and it's not going to help you recover the way you need to. In fact, I still remember when COVID first hit in 2020, everyone thought that, oh, as we go into the summer, it's going to see, you know, such lower cases and everything else, and it's just going to be, you know, it's going to go away. And I turned to my wife and I said, I bet you anything you're going to see these huge spikes in the south where it usually gets hotter. And she said, why is that? Well, they close everything up, they air condition, and there's no balanced ventilation. So they're not getting fresh air. They're just recycling the same germs over and over again. And yes, that's exactly what happened. We started to see these spikes of infections of the disease, and that was a big hit for them.
Yeah, one of the things that people get wrong about air conditioning is that air conditioning is recycled air. There's no outside air being brought in during air conditioning. It's taking the reason it is exposed to the outside at all is because of that Carnot cycle, the heat pump cycle. And what it's doing is it's taking heat from the air outside in order to boil one of the refrigerant for part of the cooling process. I'd be happy to go over that at some point. I won't do it right now. But it is not bringing in fresh air. And so when you're getting into an indoor situation where you're thinking that you're getting fresh air, but you're not, you need to educate yourself so that you're aware that you need to maybe think about some ventilation. And in those southern climes, ventilation is as important as in other places. Moisture drives are different.
Certainly.
Moisture loading is different, but we still need good, healthy indoor air quality.
I look at it like this. It's, you know, people think that moving air a lot of times is fresh air. That's not true, because, you know, moving water at a sewage plant isn't the type of water I want to go drink. So at the same time, moving air inside of your building that's of poor air quality, you're just pushing the same bad stuff around. You've got to make sure you've got something that's going to be bringing that fresh air in, exhausting the things you don't want, bringing in what you do. But, you know, here's something that, you know, that's important too. If you're in California this last summer when the wildfires were happening, my sister happens to live on the border between California and Nevada. She said that she would wake up in the morning with the window shut, and she doesn't have an ERV or an HRV, but there was so much smoke coming in. Her eyes were watering and everything else, and it was difficult to breathe. And so there's sometimes that you don't want to be bringing in outdoor air.
Or if you are bringing in outdoor air, that you have a high-quality filter filtrating that air, like an HEPA filter or something like that. So if you have a balanced ventilation system, whole house balanced ventilation system, and you have – and you're living near a fire, like a forest fire, you can actually put in – a higher level filtration system that will get down. Remember, we were talking last week about the PM2.5, that picometer sized dust, that 2.5, that is smoke. So we can use HEPA filters to filter that out. But you need to know that you need to do that, right? You need to make sure that you're understanding what filter is in there, that you have the HEPA filters to swap them out, and that you're also aware that asking the HRV to push air through a HEPA filter is going to tax the fans more. So you're going to be using some more energy to get that done.
And even if you have an HRV or an ERV, but you still have, like, let's say, an HVAC system or heating system that's a hot air furnace, or you have air conditioning that's pushing the air through the ducts as well through the same system because you have that type of setup inside your house, you definitely want to make sure the right type of filter is on there. Now, usually when you buy the most least expensive filter, it's going to be a MERV 11 or less, and MERV is a rating. It's the minimum energy or efficiency rating value. And so with that, if you get a MERV 11 or less, you're not really doing it as much good as you could. You really want to hit at least a MERV 13, and some are even going to a MERV 16. And when you get to MERV 13 and 16, you're definitely at that HEPA rating, and you want to make sure your system can filter out a lot of those particulates. Now, one thing that people are doing with HRVs and ERVs, they're trying to use the same ductwork that already exists in their home. And so they'll take a hot air furnace or air conditioning system that's ducted, and they'll put an ERV on that same ductwork or an HRV, and that will be able to circulate the air through there. Well, that's only as good as clean as the ducts are. So you got to make sure that the ductwork is still cleaned on a regular basis. There are some homes I've renovated. There was one down in Burlington on Peru Street, I remember years ago, that it looked like that ductwork had not been cleaned probably for 50 years. It was such a
build-up. The house we did 2 weeks ago, we looked into now they don't use their four-start air ducts very often. It's kind of when something else is wrong with their heating system, their wood stove. But it was a levels of dust in there. So make sure, we did say this on show one of the season, if you have four-start air ducts, you should have them cleaned at least every 3 years, if not more often.
Definitely. And so with that, if you do have any questions once again for us today, please give us a call at 802-244-1777, 802-244-1777.
So one of the things Jim just mentioned that I want to bring up is using one system to do more than one job that it wasn't designed for, right? Mm-hmm. If we have a four-stud air system, we're having ductwork that is, 14 inches wide and 9 inches tall. And the cross section of that is the where that forced hot air comes through. When you're trying to heat with hot air, you need a lot of air movement to do that. A lot of these forced hot air systems are 300, 400 cubic feet per minute. But your ventilation system per duct is probably 30 CFM CFM cubic feet per minute. So if you're trying to put ventilation air through your duct work, that's also your frost hot air duct work, it will not be getting that air to the room. There's just not enough pressure built up in those large ducts to move that low amount of air through to the endpoint that you're looking for. Will it work? Well, it'll work when the forced hot air system is engaged because that larger fan is doing the pushing. But part of duct sizing, and there's something called a manual D, part of the ASHRAE and ACCA manuals for sizing equipment, you often do not want to have your ventilation air going through your forced hot air ductwork just because you're never going to get the actual end result of that number of CFM coming through the grate in the room. You almost always want to make sure that you have a separate, smaller diameter duct that will get that to the room, like the Zender Comfo Air, the Comfo tubes, these 3-inch tubes that are self, I mean, they're very easy to install. I've done it myself, and that is making sure that your ERV or your HRV, and once again, energy recovery ventilation or heat recovery ventilation, is not going through your forced hot air system. It's just not often something that's that works.
Welcome back to House Calls Vermont. I'm Jim Bradley with my colleague and friend,
Chris West, and we're here talking about Indoor Air Quality Part 2, Season 2. And we were just talking about testing and figuring out if you have problems with indoor air quality. And with that first show that we did at the beginning of the season, we were talking about now that we're closing up our houses and we're spending more time inside, let's keep track of when people get sick, right? Mm-hmm. Not that every illness that you're going to have or experience in your house is going to be caused by your indoor air quality. But if you only have a vague memory of what's been going on, we can't use that as a diagnostic tool, right? So a good idea is just to have a piece of paper or a pad, and when somebody gets ill or isn't feeling well, write down the date, the time, what the symptoms were, and keep track of that. If you noticed over and over the same symptoms returning over an entire year, that could be indicative of something with your indoor air quality.
Let me give you a few examples of what Chris is speaking about here is the fact of it's not just ill that, oh, I've got sniffles or respiratory issues. That's part of it. But like for myself, once again, as winter would set in and we would close up the house and we'd start to get higher condensation levels on the windows, then mold growth, even though we cleaned them off, we would have our sons affected with respiratory issues on a constant basis until I dealt with the home performance issues that were in the attic. And that changed things. Or I've had clients before when they say, every time I turn on this stove, I get a little bit of lightheaded, because, and I did a test on it, and the carbon monoxide output on it was through the roof. And so I said, you need to go ahead and red tag this and get a new one because it wasn't worth servicing at that point, because it was a much older unit anyway. So that's another thing. Are there behavioral things that you do, operational issues that you perform inside the house that causes this? Like, hey, every time I start the car in the garage, I get a little lightheaded. Well, there's a reason for that. You're filling the garage full of carbon monoxide. So look at the performance. What are you doing differently than you weren't doing before? Have you then closed up the house, but you have a really wet basement, and it's like we saw just a couple weeks ago, it's causing inordinate amounts of mold growth, which then are leading to other health issues. That's the type of data logging that we're asking you to perform so you become better aware of your situation.
Yeah, in that journal, you'd want to make sure that you did link any of the types of things that Jim was talking about. If you can link, I started cooking and someone started feeling poorly, or I was doing the laundry and I got real tired every time, or any of these things that correlate. Whether they are actually causing a thing, we cannot say, but correlations are something that we'll say when you're doing a further analysis, look closely at this.
Or the one that came home and said, every time I come home, I'm more irritable. That could be something entirely different than building science. So as we say often, we're not marriage counselors. We're building science people. So we can help on some things, but not all things.
And we'll say once again that trying to diagnose these things on your own is probably not the best way to move forward. Definitely get a professional involved. We're big fans of the Efficiency Vermont Energy Excellence Network. Although there are times when we hear back from people that they had a negative interaction, that happens. Every business has situations where they have an employee out in the field who didn't do what they were supposed to do. So if you've interacted with the EEN or Efficiency Vermont and you've had a bad experience or you've been dissatisfied, it behooves you to contact Efficiency Vermont and ask to speak to a manager and say, you know what? I called your Chris and Jim told us to call the EEN. We called the EEN. The person came out, and we're deeply dissatisfied. Well, don't just walk away from that. Get in touch with Efficiency Vermont. Give them a call and say, I had an interaction with one of your EEN subcontractors, and I'm dissatisfied. Let's follow that up, because Efficiency Vermont is a great organization, and they do their best to make sure the people who are involved are doing the right thing, but they're not out there every day holding people's hands. So we need the feedback to make sure that we're keeping the program as full of good workers as possible.
And, you know, it could have been something as simple that caused that bad interaction. Could have just been the simple misunderstanding.
Yep.
Because we are trying to communicate building science to individuals that we deal with every day, the science, but other people don't. So if you're doing an ineffective job of communicating that, you know, so much of the work that we do is behind the scenes. You know, it's in the attics, it's in the crawl space, in the basement, in the walls, whatever, behind siding. And so you're not going to really get to as touch and feel and have a tactile response as much to a lot of those improvements. So you have to do a really good job as a professional to educate your clients and make sure that they are on board with what's going on, so that they, once they do recognize the performance upgrades inside the home, it's more comfortable, you know, warmer, whatever, the air is healthier inside, you're feeling better, and you're spending less on your heating bills, you know, they're able to communicate that to the rest of their friends and family, public, whatever, and it gets the word out, because there's just so many people who are trying to address problems that they don't understand why it's happening. They're trying to – they'll go out there to the hardware store, buy some product, put it in, and not get the results they're wanting, or make situations worse. So once again, there's so many of these items we've talked about, from indoor air quality, building efficiency, dealing with mold, dealing with, you know, if you're going to replace your siding, whatever. And we keep pointing back to that same direction. Get a professional who's been properly educated. Yep. Now, see, in the state of Vermont, it's a little pet peeve of mine, there's no licensure. There's no contractor registry. You could be – anybody out there.
Any of you could be a contractor tomorrow.
As long as
you not tomorrow, because it's Sunday. You have to wait till Monday and call the Secretary of State and start a company.
Pay your $50 fee, $75 fee, whatever it is, and have a decal for your truck or vehicle and say, I'm in business now, without any qualifications. And so if you can sell a product, you can sell your service. And if you can sell your service, but you don't have the education and you're going to make fundamental changes in an area, climate zone 5 and 6, where you have big extremes in temperature and condensation levels or moisture levels.
High levels of humidity on the outside.
Yes, and so you're going to be making these changes, or you'll just replace like in kind. You know, you'll see a failure, you'll replace it, but not have the understanding of why it failed. You're just repeating the same cycle of failure. And so you want to make sure, as a homeowner, you're getting somebody who is certified. You know, the disclaimer on the front of our show when it first starts, it says, get a licensed contractor to come in. Licensed building contractor in
Vermont?
You got
to go to New York and New Hampshire to get a licensed contractor.
Yeah, so you want to make sure that contractors know what they're doing to do it right. Because even right now, and this is something that I kind of struggle with, because next week there's another climate action initiative that's being forwarded to make things, in a sense, they're really trying to improve what we're doing, use less energy, things like that. I get it, make things more efficient. And they keep pushing these goals out there, and they keep pushing these initiatives without the underpinnings that will ensure success. Those underpinnings are an informed public, an informed contractor base, the right people, and making sure that we test and verify, and yes, I said inspect the work that was done. You know, because I still go into homes today where, like we mentioned earlier, they made the house really, really tight. They hit that RB standard of 3 air changes or less, but they got so tight that they're ignoring the requirements under ASHRAE 62.2 for indoor air ventilation, where you should have at least 18 CFM of ventilation per individual in the home. There's another metric where you can say 7.5 CFM and then another 1 CFM per 100 square feet, but it meters out basically to the same amount of the requirement. But if you're not addressing that ventilation, you're making that house tighter, and you're concentrating the VOCs and all that moisture inside that house, you know, for a long period of time, and that's going to affect the building occupants. And there's no one stepping up to check that the way they should. I also see other builders where they are actually violating fire code, whether it's the NFPA, where they'll, you know, requires that if you have insulation exposed in an area where there's going to be bodily entry possible, you know, where someone can walk into that space and do whatever, sit down, perform work, or live, you have to have a thermal barrier over that insulation. If you don't, it can catch on fire, be a big health and safety hazard to the individuals, because that's a toxic type of substance. And yet those things are still being missed. They're being ignored in most areas of Vermont. And so if we're going to be passing these things, if we're going to be passing new initiatives or forwarding new initiatives to make things better for the climate, we have to make sure, though, we have the ability to achieve those goals and not just 10 years from now realize we didn't meet the past ones and so set new ones.
Yep.
That cycle of failure has been, duplicated again and again and again in the state of Vermont, and it's really unfortunate. That's why
the difference between aspiration and achievable,
yes.
Right? Difference between an ideal and actually on the ground, how we're going to make that work. So we've got just a couple more minutes. We've got like 8 more minutes on the show. I just want to throw the number out there if you want to get in under the wire here, 802-244-1777. Something that Jim said about insulation in a basement. And what Jim was specifically relating to was we've seen a number of basements where a contractor put up a rigid insulation but did not put an ignition barrier up. And while that in and of itself is bad because of the danger of that, it's kind of worse because the code says it's got to be covered. You have insurance, and if you have a fire in your house and they find that that was an existing unsafe situation, your insurance may not cover the damages for that fire. So if you have exposed – and there are parameters there, right? If you're talking just about a little bit of spray foam or rigid foam in your perimeter joist bay, that is not required to be covered with an ignition barrier. But anything larger than that, anything like the wall has got insulation on it, and you can see that blue board or that pink board.
Or even the fiberglass that has the paper on it that when you read it, it has a little flame pictogram, and it says, do not leave exposed. This is a fire hazard. We see that all the time.
All the time. So make sure that you're protecting yourself from not being covered by your insurance, right? We all have house insurance required because we have mortgages and mortgage requires it. If you own your house outright, you may not have house insurance, although it's not recommended. But make sure that you're not creating a situation where that $1,000 to $2,000 a year you're spending on insurance is completely negated by the fact you have an unsafe condition in your house that would negate that insulation, that insurance.
And some may say, well, the checks and balances for the homeowner are the inspections. Well, there's not building inspections in most locations in the state of Vermont, and even where home inspections have been performed, when you're transferring ownership from one person to the other, from the owner to the buyer, you think, well, I got that home inspection done. Well, sometimes you have really, really great home inspectors who will pick up on these things, but we've been in too many homes where they don't, and they omit this, not necessarily on purpose, but just because they don't understand that, gosh, I shouldn't leave that blue, pink, or green board exposed in the basement because it's a hazard, or that open paper face fiberglass, I've left that exposed too. That you shouldn't do that because it says right on there. In fact, I think every audit now that we do, when we find that, I just ask the customer, could you give me a free second? Could you read this for me? Don't leave exposed. This is a fire hazard. So they can see it. And so you think that most inspectors could see it. But when those checks and balances that are limited fail, you need to make sure – this is why we do the show. We do the show so you as a consumer and a contractor know better.
Yep.
You have the information to make the appropriate decisions. As I've said so many times before, you can't make good decisions with bad information. So you've got to have the right information as you make these choices on how to move forward with your renovation projects, new builds, or even if you're just in a home and you're wondering, what's going on in here? Find out. Do the indoor air quality test with us. Find out what's going on in the home. Maybe that might lead to a home performance review at your house by us or another contractor that does that type of work. But then you're going to better understand how your house is operating as a system, what needs to be corrected, and what expense that might be to improve things.
I think that if we look at our last 5 or 6 audits, every one of them had some fire hazard based on insulation that was not properly dealt with.
And indoor air quality at the same time, from mold to whatever, lead paint, vermiculite. We've seen it. In fact, I was in a home just recently where remediation was done. I got back up in the attic.
So just to be clear, this is a house that had vermiculite in it. The vermiculite has most often has asbestos mingled through it, right? It's got asbestos, so it's a hazardous waste. And it can only be professionally remediated. You're not allowed to remove this on your own because asbestos is a hazardous waste. So Jim had went into this house where this company had already claimed that it had been properly remediated, and back to Jim for the rest of the story.
And I found well, you can tell vermiculite because it's shiny, it looks crystalline, but it's light, but basically when you shine a flashlight on it, it shimmers. And so you can say, oh, there it is. And so the contractor said, are you sure that's just not cellulose? Cellulose doesn't shimmer. And so I did pick it up and I did look at inspect, and it definitely was vermiculite. And so you want to make sure if you're getting this remediated and you're spending thousands and thousands of dollars to have that done, that you do so completely. And that way your house is going to be safe and you're not going to have the possibility of asbestos in the home. And so once again, just make sure whatever you do inside the home, you're getting this professional to look at this, get a better understanding of maybe it's just a simple indoor air quality check. Then that could lead to a home performance check. But then when you do decide to make changes, you're doing it with great information and you're going to make changes that are going to last and are going to promote health and safety instead of to draw back from that.
So that is indoor air quality in a nutshell. We have done two shows on indoor air quality, on the sources of possible contaminants, on what we can do to test and find out where our indoor air quality is at, and also strategies for mitigating that once we close our houses up. Like in the summertime, I'm not going to worry about my indoor air quality because I'm opening my windows. But as soon as we get into the times when we're closing it up, where we're getting these cold temperatures, where we're no longer using the outdoor openings in our house to bring in fresh air, that we need to think about where our fresh air is coming from and make sure that our indoor air quality is good.
And next week, one thing that really lends itself or contributes to indoor air quality pluses and minuses, and a lot more minuses usually than pluses, is going to be a badly appointed basement. Whether that's going to be an old rubble foundation, stacked stone, if it's going to be stacked block, you know, concrete masonry units.
Covered floor, uncovered floor.
Standing water.
Right. We were just in a house a couple of weeks ago where they had an open well in the basement.
Yes.
And we're suffering from really bad
mold.
High relative humidities and mold. And so the first thing that we said, the rest of the basement floor was also a dirt floor, which is also a source of humidity. But that well, getting that well capped, is the first thing that we mentioned. So if you have an open well in your basement, and you can go into the basement and look right at the water, that is something that is a form of standing water. Well, oftentimes when we're in a basement, we say standing water, we're dealing with some kind of infiltration of rainwater from the outside or groundwater welling up. But this was actually an open well in the person's basement. So if you have that, that's a clear indication. Get that capped. Don't wait. You can get in touch with a contractor to do it, or just put a piece of plastic over it and weight it down. You just want to reduce the evaporation of water into the space.
So if you're listening today and you do have questions about your basement, feel free to write those down, either email them to us in advance, or you can go ahead and give us a call next Saturday and be prepared with that. We'll be happy to receive your call.
So this is, until next week, Chris West from House Calls Vermont and
Jim Bradley.
And we'll see you next time.
Have a great day.
House Calls Vermont on WDEV has been brought to you by RK Miles, a third-generation family-owned business. Proud to be your local building material supplier. You can find a location near you at rkmiles.com. By Poly Construction, for over 30 years known for anything construction, big or small jobs. One call does it all. POLLIconstruction.com. By Ken Libby of the Stowe Area Realty Group at Keller Williams Stowe, your trusted advisor. 802-793-2002. Curtis Lumber, with two locations in Vermont, Williston and Burlington. Request a quote for your next project online at curtislumber.com. And by Sticks and Stuff and Swanton Lumber. They've got locations in Williston and Burlington. Your trusted advisor, Sticks and Stuff and Swanton Lumber, Enosburg, St. Albans, Swanton, Derby, and Middlesex. By Shamrock Painting, painting and custom wood finishing, shamrockpainting.com. By Matt Clark's Northern Basement Systems, for all things basementy, northernnefoundations.com. By White Windows, high-performance passive house windows and doors. Online at wythewindows.com. Be sure to join us next Saturday at 12:30 during the noon hour for House Calls Vermont, right here on WDEV FM and AM.
Our house, it has a crowd.